The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
Tonight's show, I'll cover the London Olympics, Major League Baseball, the top movies at the box office, and our four-week segment on our NFL preview. All this and more tonight on Unsigned. Hey, everybody. How's it going out there? My name is Ryan. Welcome to Unsigned. Hopefully, you're having a nice evening. Hopefully, you had a great weekend. It's Tuesday night, and it is time to get with it. We got all kinds of stuff lined up for you tonight. Lots and lots of sports. The Olympics to boot. Lots of things to cover. Our NFL preview, as I said at the top of the show. We've been taking two divisions for the next 4 weeks. This is our second week. We're taking two divisions. Now, last week we did, the AFC and NFC East, and we'll get into the AFC and NFC North in a little bit. But right now, let's get into the Olympics. I mean, we're winding down, for the 30th Olympiad in London, and what an Olympics has been. Lots of information to cover. And I'm telling you, I just want you to go back, hang out, have a drink, do whatever you're doing. Just relax, unwind.
Just sit back and enjoy the show.
Exactly. Sit back and enjoy the show. We got a lot of great stuff for you tonight. Let's get right into it. Let's start with women's soccer. Now, we don't cover a whole lot of soccer on the show, but I tell you what, I really, really love what I saw yesterday for women's soccer. Not only was it great for the Olympics, it was great for the sport, it was great for Team USA and the women who participated both for Team USA and for the women of Canada. What an epic clash of two very skilled, highly skilled soccer clubs taking it to the maximum. It was goal for goal, back and forth the whole match. They ended up going to basically a second overtime for soccer, over 120 minutes played of soccer. And Alex Morgan, the forward for Team USA, ends up with a header goal a la Abby Wambach with about 30 seconds left to play in the game. Unbelievable game-winning goal. So, boom. The U.S. is in the gold medal game, which sets up, coincidentally enough, it sets them up for a rematch. If you remember in 2011, Team USA in the World Cup, 2011 World Cup, women's soccer, Japan and U.S. ended up losing to Japan on penalty kicks. This is the grudge match, the rematch for the gold medal at Wembley Stadium Thursday. That is going to be must-see TV Thursday, 2:30 Eastern. Make sure you're definitely tuned in for that to watch Team USA bring in the gold against Japan and get a little redemption as well in the 2012 London Games. Definitely must-see TV. Definitely check that out Thursday, 2:30 Eastern. Check your local listings. I'm sure NBC will have that live. They'd be crazy not to. But moving on, more Olympic coverage. The men's 100 meter, again, the fastest man in the world, Usain Bolt, wins the 100 meter this past Sunday night, becoming the first person to win back-to-back 100 meter gold medals since Carl Lewis did it in 1984 in Los Angeles and 1988 in the Seoul Games. Now, also, Usain Bolt won the 200 meter. That's going to air sometime in NBC's tape delay this evening in primetime. Can you imagine running about 120 or about 110 yards on 100 meters, about 110 yards in about less than 10 seconds? Can you imagine being that fast? Or how about running 220 yards between 19 and 20 seconds? That's pretty dang fast. Now, Usain Bolt, not only is this guy a great runner, but during an interview, he stopped a reporter during USA Women's 400-meter ceremony. The winner of that race was Sandra Richard Ross. She won the gold medal, and it was right after his qualifying for the 100-meter, and he's breathing hard. The reporters are all there trying to interview him. Of course, he's one of the most popular picks. He actually stops the interview. He goes, "Is that live right now?" And the reporter goes, "Yes." He's like, "That's the national anthem." He's like, "We need to pay attention to that." Stops the interview right on TV and makes the reporter stop and listen. And he, stands at attention until the full national anthem completes, and then he takes the interview. That not only shows you, one, he's a great athlete, but what a classy individual, the runner from Jamaica, Usain Bolt. Wonderful personality, and right there, it tells you all you need to know when you see that on TV about, the type of character and individual he is to just take time out of his interview to pay respect to another fellow athlete who had won a gold medal. I thought that was remarkable, and commend him 100%. And also congratulations on winning the 100 and the 200 meter, making it look easy. I mean, the last, you know, seemed like 50 yards or so, he was just kind of looking around like, yeah, I'm running. I'm the fastest man in the world, and no one can catch me. I'll take my gold medal. Thank you. Moving on to the men's 400 meter. Now, track and field, a lot of stuff to cover in track and field. It started last Friday night. So many events. We'll try to do as many as we can. But the men's 400 meter from Grenada, this is also a great story. Karani Jones wins the gold medal in the 400 meter with a time of 43.94 seconds. 400 meters, that's over four football fields long, in 43.94 seconds. Think about that for a second. Now, as everyone is gathered and watching, this is Grenada's very first medal ever. The 19-year-old won it, you know, again, non-US runner, breaks the 44-second barrier. He's the first non-USA runner to do so. The fastest Caribbean athlete in the 400 meter ever. The government of Grenada has declared this Tuesday after the basically a national holiday. The Prime Minister Tillman Thomas claims James' victory is an inspiration to the country. Karani Jones, amazing athlete, great runner. But another story I want to wrap into this. Now, for those of you who have been listening to the show for a while now, you know that about a year ago, we brought up a story about a gentleman by the name of Oscar Pistorius. And that name may sound familiar if you're watching the Olympics the last couple of days. The reason that name sounds familiar, if you've been listening to the show, is that we did a story, also known as the Blade Runner. He's the first double amputee to compete against able-bodied athletes in the Olympics or even the World Championships, which he competed in last year for South Africa in 2011. And he was actually, you know, declined from competing in the World Championships and the Olympics. Obviously, that was overturned with some help from some gentlemen from MIT who helped create the carbon fiber legs he uses to run. His legs were taken from him, I believe, at a very young age. Before he was even a year old, he lost both of his legs from his knee down. So, remarkable story. But Oscar Pistorius, not only did he compete in the 400 meters, he actually qualified to the semifinals. It's just one of those great stories that you get with the Olympics. And this, I tell you what, this Olympics, there's no shortage of great stories across the board. This is definitely a great one. Not only history-making one, but also, you know, during the qualifying, the semifinal match, he ended up coming last in one of the semifinal heats. The winner of that match in that race was Kahani James. James came over and gave Pistorius a high five and hugged him and asked him if they could exchange name tags, nameplates they wear on their chest. James wanted show ultimate respect to Pistorius by basically just saying, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you did this. Great show of respect to the sport and to him, and really two great guys, great athletes. It's a really great story. One of the great moments, again, of the 2012 Olympics, the Oscar Pistorius story. Now, here's a story that's probably not one of the greatest stories you're going to hear about. South Korean fencer Shin Lee Lam provided one of the ineligible images of 2011. She actually staged an hour-long tearful protest after losing to Germany's one of Germany's fencers in an individual semifinal match. Shin's coach claimed Hademan's winning hit in fencing came after the final second of the clock had ticked off, which was being controlled by a 15-year-old British volunteer. As the time had elapsed, Shin was required to stay in the pist, while the judges considered and ultimately rejected her appeal to look back at the footage. So after she had lost the bronze medal match, the International Fencing Federation offered her a special consolation medal, which she reportedly has refused. She is not going to take a consolation medal, she said, in for an hour-long stage, claiming that she should have won the bronze medal, South Korean fencer Shin Lee Lam. So a very interesting story there. She refused her consolation medal. Kudos to her. I wouldn't take it either. It was a blatant error by the officials and the timekeeper, and they should have went back and looked at it. They have that option in fencing, from what I've seen in fencing the last couple weeks. I'm not an expert by any means. From what I've seen, they do have the option of going back and looking to make sure the hit was a legal hit, and they refused to do that. In this particular case, you figure with a medal on the line, this is something that the judges would do, and they did not in this case for whatever reason. Therefore, she loses out on her bronze medal. Moving back to track and field, the shot put. The gold medal goes to Poland and the dominance of Maciej Tomas, who has won 3 gold medals in a row at the Olympics, but the bronze medal goes to the United States' Rhys Hoffa, who finally gets his medal after 3 tries in the Olympics. He was at Beijing and also at the Athens Games in 2004. He finally gets a medal after 3 tries in the shot put. Congratulations to Rhys Hoffa getting the bronze medal for the United States. Men's trampoline. Yes, you heard me right. Men's trampoline. And China won it. Dong Dong takes gold. I can only imagine what that call sounded like. Dong Dong gets gold. Dong Dong. Yes. Dong Dong takes gold with a 62.99. An amazing score for Dong Dong. That is one golden dong in men's trampoline. Men and women's beach volleyball. Let's start with the men's side. Phil Dahlhauser and Todd Rogers, they were the gold medal winners in 2008, and they were upset Friday by the youngsters from Italy. They were the number 16 seed going in. Their Olympics are through as far as men's beach volleyball. Now, the women's beach volleyball, completely different story. Misty May and Kate Walsh, who are the heavy favorites to take it all, they won it in China, and they haven't even lost a match in Olympic play. I believe they're like 35-0 at this point right now. They are going to take on Jennifer Kessie and April Ross, who did take on Brazil this afternoon and won. This is the first time that Kessie and Ross had beaten the Brazilian team in 9 tries. Today was a good day to do it. So now Thursday, and that Brazilian team won the silver in Beijing in 2008. So now Thursday night, you have Team USA versus Team USA for the gold medal match in beach women's volleyball. Misty May and Carrie Walsh taking on Jennifer Kessie and April Ross. That is going to be one heck of an event. And as much as I would like to see Ross and Kessie with the upside, it's a great story. You can't go wrong either way, but I really think Walsh and May are just not quite ready to give up the throne yet. This is going to be their last Olympics. I think Ross and Kessie are going to give them all they can handle. They're the only competition I think they're really going to face. The Brazilian team, I think, could have gave them a run, but obviously the Brazilian team didn't win. You're looking Kessie, Ross versus Walsh and May. That is going to be a very, very competitive, high-energy volleyball, beach volleyball match in the London Games. Moving back to the gymnastics, the women's all-around saw Gabby Douglas take gold, and it was really an amazing display of talent and pure athletic energy, and her smile was contagious throughout the whole stadium. Congratulations to her. It was hard not to smile during that event. She was really, really on her game and won the Olympics gold medal for all-around in women's gymnastics. She did not fare very well yesterday in the uneven bars, finishing last, but still leaving with 2 gold medals in the Olympic Games. And a lot of people, are talking online like, oh, her hair and this, that, and the other. Look, this girl is 17 years old and has dedicated literally her whole life to this event and went out and has won 2 gold medals in the Olympics. So, cut her some slack. She seems like a nice young lady, great smile, worked her butt off to do it. So, people who are, criticizing her hair and how she looks and stuff need to just get over themselves because the young woman is probably going to come back in Rio in 4 years and win more gold. Now, on the other side of women's gymnastics, Michaela Maroney, who was the outright favorite to win the individual women's vault, ended up losing the vault to Russia, getting the silver medal when she fell on her last vault. Was really heartbroken. She took a little flack for not showing the greatest sportsmanship right after, but I think she was in such shock because she was such a heavy favorite and was so far ahead that the only thing that could have lost her the gold was basically her falling on the vault, and that's exactly what happened. But she did later, hug. Congratulate the Russian team. So a lot was made of nothing there. I think she was just in shock that she was so far ahead and then ended up losing the gold medal. Still silver, nothing to be disappointed about. But in her eyes, I think it was gold or bust, even though she does walk away with a silver and also part of Team USA. So she got the group gold medal as well. So still an overall quality showing at the 2012 Games. Moving on to swimming. I mean, how can you talk about swimming without talking about Michael Phelps and the record-setting, the most medals anybody's ever won in the Olympic Games ever in the 30 Olympics that have been held? Michael Phelps has more medals than anybody who's ever competed in any of them. This guy wins 3 more golds, the 200 butterfly, the backstroke, breaking another record. So right now, breaking another record that has stood for 50 years. Michael Phelps ends his swimming career with 22 medals, 4 world records. 18 of those 22 medals are gold medals. An amazing, just amazing performance by Michael Phelps. What more can you say? I mean, 22 medals, 18 of them are gold, 4 world records. Doesn't get much better than that. I don't think that's a record anybody anytime will ever touch or get close to. It'll probably at least be another 50 years before anyone even gets close to it, if ever. So, again, just showing, again, how historic these Olympic Games really have been. Also in the pool, Missy Franklin. I said last week, this young woman has a chance to steal the spotlight, and she did exactly that from Team USA. She was a standout, one of the best young swimmers in the Olympics, made a statement Friday winning gold in the women's 200 backstroke, and also setting a new world record. Missy Franklin will leave London with 3 gold medals, a bronze medal, 1 world record, and 1 Olympic record set in the 4x100 freestyle, and an American record set in the 100 backstroke. So she set 3 different records, an American record, an Olympic record, a world record, gets 3 gold medals and a bronze. Not a bad showing for your first Olympics. Moving on to badminton. This is just a disgrace for people who like competition and sports altogether. 2 China teams were eliminated. A total of 8 players total from other different countries, South America and a few others, had been banned from the games because they were trying to throw and lose matches to get a better spot in the medal rounds later for badminton. The video for this is absolutely hilarious. I mean, you know, Great Britain, they take great pride in badminton in that country, and they knew exactly what these players were doing, throwing the match, bad serves, hitting the ball, you know, over out of bounds deliberately. It was just a poor showing. The crowd was booing. The officials came out and actually warned them, and they still continued to basically throw the match, thus barring them from Olympic play. Now, China ended up taking the gold regardless because they had a third team, so they ended up getting the gold no matter what. All I'm going to say is this when it comes to badminton, everybody remember, respect the shuttlecock. Respect it. It's badminton. You respect that shuttlecock. One more story I'm going to do tonight on the Olympics, and it is a great story. It's another feel-good story from the Olympics. You can't get enough of these, in my opinion. Team USA making history in the event of judo. Women's judo, 75-kilogram contest. Kayla Harrison from Middletown, Ohio, took gold and was the first American ever to win a medal. Not just a medal in judo, but the first ever to win a gold medal in judo. So congratulations to her for taking gold in judo. I mean, I watched the match. It was a 100% domination. It was dominant performance from head to toe. Great story. Kayla Harrison has a great story as well. But congratulations to her. And really, I mean, another historic moment made and set at the 2012 London Games. It's been a pleasure to view. Now, again, the things coming up, you have indoor women's volleyball. Those finals are becoming up on Friday. You have the finals for soccer on Thursday. You have the finals for beach volleyball on Thursday evening. You also have men's basketball. Team USA, they've struggled a little bit, but I think they're finding their stride a little bit. They kind of blew the doors off Argentina in the second half. Women's basketball, it's no competition for the U.S. They have won, I don't know, 38 in a row now, dating back to the 2000 games. So, yeah, women's and men's basketball is well in hand for the United States. No worry there. And more track and field stuff. We'll do a final Olympics update next week, so definitely check us out for that. And moving on here tonight, again, my name is Ryan. This is Unsigned. Thanks for hanging out with us. Moving right along, we're going something we haven't done in a couple weeks, and that is our Major League Baseball recap. We'll start with the American League like we always do, with the New York Yankees well out in front in first place. The Baltimore Orioles right there. They've won 3 in a row, 6 out of the last 4. Looks like they're going to get that wild card spot, though. The American Central, what a topsy-turvy division this has been all year. But looks like the White Sox and the Tigers, much of what everybody thought would be the division race, is the Cleveland. A lot of people were saying the Windians. Well, I'll tell you what, they aren't doing a lot of winning in Cleveland. They decided they didn't have any hitting, and at the trade deadline they did cricket, 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 cricket. Yeah, they did nothing, and they've lost 10 in a row since then. Can we get somebody? Maybe they can get the batters to set up a T-ball for the Indians hitters. Maybe that'll help. I don't know. Probably not. 0-10. It's like reverse major league out there at Progressive Field in Cleveland. Unbelievably awful, awful baseball being played in Cleveland right now. AL West, the Texas Rangers, and the Los Angeles Angels, and well, you know, the Oakland A's are right there too, playing that money ball like they always do. They've been kind of up and down. They had a nice winning streak there. They're only about two and a half, three games out right now, depending on what happens this evening. But that race is becoming a lot more interesting as we move down the home stretch of Major League Baseball. Looking at the National League, the Washington Nationals, they've won 7 out of their last 10. They look to basically be the part. The Atlanta Braves creeping up. They've won 8 of their last 10. Two teams playing very, very good baseball, and the bets are floating around just above that 500 mark. Still within striking distance, a lot of baseball to go. Looking at the National League Central, the Cincinnati Reds, even without Votto, they have, you know, they had a stretch there where they won 10 games in a row. They've won 7 out of their last 10. The Pittsburgh Pirates still fighting, clawing, scratching. They might actually end up with a wild card spot. I can't remember the last time the Pittsburgh Pirates were in a playoff situation. It's been a long, long time, maybe 20 years, if not more. So keep an eye on that National League Central. Looking at the NL West, it's been Dodgers, Dodgers, Dodgers all year. Oh, wait a second. The San Francisco Giants make a couple moves to get Hunter Pence from Philadelphia, add some hitting, they add some pitching. All of a sudden, we have a race. Only a half game separates the Giants and the Dodgers. The rest of the division is a dismal. The Diamondbacks, the Padres, and the Rockies are basically playing like a minor league team. Maybe the Indians and the Rockies can get together and form one team together. I don't know. But that's been your Major League Baseball recap. And now it's time to head off the path here on Unsigned, something we've been doing for a while. And this is basically everything that's not relative to sports, and a very controversial story I want to start off with. And that is Jeff Ross. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with Jeff Ross is one of the comedians that always does this Comedy Central roast. He's a big stand-up guy as well. If you're into stand-up comedy, Jeff Ross has been doing, you know, the Comedy Central roast for quite some time. During the filming of the Comedy Central roast for Roseanne, which is going to air here in a couple weeks on Comedy Central, the legend of Jim Ross shows up. Now, Jeff Ross shows up as Joe Paterno, dressed as Joe Paterno, and each side of him, to the left and his right, are two boys in Penn State helmets wearing nothing but towels. And of course, you know, some people are mad, outraged. When asked about it, Jeff Ross said, and I quote from Jeff Ross, "Yes, I crossed the line." And that's what roasts are all about. That's what Roseanne is all about. It's unapologetic comedy. If I held back, I would have done her a disservice. Explain to reporters on the red carpet, Ross said, what the P is. He said the P on the jacket is for people who can't take a joke. He went on, if you're offended, why don't you just turn it off and turn a blind eye just like Joe Paterno did and look the other way? I take it at that point they probably didn't ask Jeffrey Ross too many more questions. Looking forward to seeing that comedy roast. I heard he told some jokes that are actually not going to make TV in regards to the Penn State and also the Colorado shooting. So Jeff Ross not afraid to cross the line and stand up and also on national television. You got to admire the guy's moxie for whether you agree with it or not. Hey, he's speaking his mind, and you can't necessarily disagree with this point of, you know, people looking the other way. Maybe it's not necessarily the best thing to do. Another story that I want to bring up before we continue on off the path, and this I just realized this before we went on air, and that is the singer Len Strait, who was the singer of the band Snot. This is the anniversary of his death today. He would have been 42. It's been 12 years since the death of Len Strait. He would have been, again, 42 today. So, just to take a moment there, and if you're not familiar with the band, many may not be, but Len Strait was killed in a car accident August 7th and died. It wasn't, to a drug overdose. It wasn't because he wasn't doing the right thing in life. It was just one of those freak accidents. Ended up taking a prizing and really a great songwriter and a guy with a tremendous voice and a great passion for life. He's been dead now for quite some time. So definitely missed Len Strait. Straight up, Snot was a influential hard rock metal band. Definitely missed their music. Moving on, Randy Blythe. This is a story we've done a couple weeks now. Here's an update on it. We've followed it pretty much down the line, and we'll continue to follow it as it develops. But right now, Randy Blythe, the singer of Lamb of God, was released Thursday, August 2nd, from the Chechen prison after being incarcerated for 5 weeks on charges of manslaughter stemming from a 2010 incident. Blythe was accused of contributing to the death of a 19-year-old fan who allegedly tossed from the stage at a Lamb of God concert in the Czech Republic in 2010. Now, Blythe issued a statement. I'll read some excerpts from the statement here. Again, he is in the United States now. He was released after serving, 5 weeks in a Chechen prison. He says, I cannot express how emotional it has made me upon my release and to read about or even a fraction of the voices that were raised on my behalf, from legends to the music industry, of fans across the world, and even people who were previously unaware of my existence but sympathized with my plight. I am truly humbled and cannot thank you enough for your thoughts and prayers. I would especially like to thank people of Richmond, Virginia, his hometown, for standing by me in the 40 hours I have been home. Many people have that I've never met before have stopped me on the street, waved and smiled as I passed by and said hello in a restaurant, or have said hello, hey, glad you're home, Randy. You know, so he said he was very grateful to be home and to call Richmond, Virginia, his home. It is deemed necessary, he said, to return to Prague to stand trial. He will do so. I will maintain my innocence 100% and will do so steadfastly. I will not hide in the United States for safe or extradition of possible prosecution. As I write this, the family of a fan of the band suffers through incredible tragedy, loss of a child. They have to deal with this consistently varying media reports, such circumstances surrounding his death. I am charged with maliciously causing severe bodily harm to a young man resulting in his death. While I consider the charge leveled against me ludicrous and without qualification, my opinion makes no difference in this matter. The charge exists, and for the family of the young man, questions remain. The worst possible pain remains. It is fairly common knowledge amongst fans of my bands that I have lost a child myself, and unfortunately and ultimately familiar with the pain. Therefore, I will do what I can to help them in their time of grief. The family needs and deserves some real answers, not a media exploitation. Very well said by Randy Blythe, and I commend him for wanting to see this through. Again, we'll continue to update you on the story here. I'll continue to update you on the story as far as what happens in the Randy Blythe story as it unfolds. It looks like it's going to probably take a little while. Like I said, it's been 6 weeks now at this point. It's a slow process, so we'll see how it shapes up. In other news, System of a Down drummer Johnny Doleman said, we do not know what will happen next, but I'd like to be in the studio next year, possibly making an album in 2014. This has got to come to great news for fans of the band System of a Down. This would be the first album from the band since 2005. So still about, a good year and a half away, maybe 2 years away, depending on when in 2014 they release this. But, so definitely some good news out there if you're a System of a Down fan, that they are at least entertaining the idea of at least doing one more album. Elton John called Madonna a nightmare and declared her career over in an interview with an Australian journalist on this past Sunday night. She's a nightmare, said Elton John of Madonna. Her career is over. Her tour has been a disaster, and it couldn't happen to a bigger, this is Elton John's words, by the way, it couldn't happen to a bigger cunt. That's his words. He took a poke at Madonna's appearance, too, saying she looked like a fucking fairground stripper. I mean, at first, I mean, it makes me laugh. But then I think about it and I go, Elton John making fun of someone's appearance. Have anyone seen a picture of Elton John lately? I mean, this fruit basket looks like a cross between a cracked out homeless version of the Lucky Charms elf and the creature from the Lord of the Rings Gollum. OK, somebody ate that crocodile rock, I'm telling you right now. Does anybody remember Spinal Tap? Completely unrelated to Elton John, of course. Now, Spinal Tap, now there's a new mockumentary out that's going to star four adult performers of porn who are now going to form an all-girl rock band. The DVD is coming out September 25th, just in time for stocking stuffers. The biggest challenge a porn star band faces is being taken seriously, Olsen says. We're very talented musicians, but not everybody is willing to give us a chance. The band is called Tight. Other band names, I guess they left out, were the Loose and Easy, but I guess Tight gives them more pop. You know what I mean? So look for the band Tight and their mockumentary coming to a town near you. Top movies at the box office this weekend, starting with number 10 and working our way up, is Magic Mike at $1.3 million, the movie Brave at $2.8 million, The Amazing Spider-Man at $4.3 million, Step Up Revolution. still shocked that's even in the top 10 at $5.3 million. That's a lot of step up right there. The movie Ted still hanging in the top 10 at $5.4 million. The Watch, which I heard is not a very good film at all, $6.3 million. Ice Age, Continental Drift, $8.4 million. Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Dog Days, $14.7 million. The remake of the 1990 classic Total Recall, $26 million. And again, number one at the box office, The Dark Knight Rises at $36.4 million. Still haven't had a chance to see Dark Knight. I feel bad that I haven't, but definitely going to try to sneak that in at some point. I hear it's an epic classic as far as trilogies go, and it's the perfect ending to a trilogy, so I look forward to seeing that film and giving a review on the show. Movies opening this weekend to keep an eye out for, and that is Bourne Legacy, starring Jeremy Renner, who also stars as Hawkeye in The Avengers and also starred in The Town and the movie The Hurt Locker. Also, you'll see Edward Norton in that film as well. Bourne Legacy comes out this weekend. And a film I'm looking forward to that looks absolutely hilarious. It's got Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis. It is The Campaign. This movie looks too good to miss, especially given the fact that we are in the middle of a presidential campaign right now. Only a couple months away, hard to believe. So definitely be on the lookout for The Campaign. Interesting how that affects the box office as well. This has been Off the Path, and right now it's time for our NFL preview.
False start, start. Offense.
You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game.
Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
Congratulations. See you in Pittsburgh.
Can't wait.
That's why we took the damn field. Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their ass. But they are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
Nobody's getting let off the hook here. It's time for our NFL preview. For the next 4 weeks, we're going to take two divisions for the next 4 weeks and break them down. Last week, again, it was our first week. This is our second week. And this week, we're taking on the NFC and the AFC North, two divisions with a lot of history. And let's start with the NFC North. Speaking of history, the Green Bay Packers ran away with the division last year coming off their Super Bowl win. But it was not to be a repeat as the champs get beat at Lambeau Field by the soon-to-be Super Bowl champion, the New York Football Giants. Now, do I think Green Bay is going to be 15-1 again this year? Wouldn't shock me if they were, but I don't see that happening. I think the division that they're in is going to be a lot tougher than people think. But again, I still think a realistic record for this team is 13-3, which is, I mean, still one of the best records in the league other than New England that we did last week. Realistically, I think 13-3 is right where I think Green Bay would like to be, division leader, home field. I think their major questions, I think, are defense, especially in the secondary, and also at running back. Can James Stark, the running back for the Green Bay Packers, handle the load at running back? Last year, they struggled running the ball, and I think that was really their downfall when it came down to it, when they got against a team like the Giants that can get at the quarterback and put pressure. So they could find a running back that can give them balance like they had a couple years ago. I think Green Bay can be very dangerous and definitely Super Bowl contenders, no doubt about it. Now, the Chicago Bears, a lot of people are not giving this team enough credit. I'm really high on the Bears this year, as long as they stay healthy. I mean, a lot of people forget last year, if it wasn't for the injury to Jay Cutler, the injury to Matt Forte, they would have been in the playoffs, no doubt about it. Now they add Brandon Marshall. They re-sign Forte. They draft the receiver out of South Carolina, Alshon Jeffrey. They've made some very nice changes. They have nice balance now in the passing and running, which they definitely need. And a lot of people say, oh, that defense is old. Look, I'll tell you what, Julius Peppers, Lance Briggs, Brian Urlacher, yeah, they're getting a little older, but I tell you what, these guys are smart, they're savvy, they're veteran, they still have good speed, they play with a lot of pride. That defense is very stout, very, very effective in that scheme of Lovie Smith. I expect them to they've really made the right adjustments as far as free agency. They spent a lot of money, yes, but they've also drafted very well, bringing in young talent, keeping that defense fresh. And you have the X factor, as always, on special teams. That is Devin Hester, returning punts, returning kicks. I think the Bears are going to have a surprising season. They are not going to be an easy out for anybody. I think they march into the playoffs as a very, very dangerous wild card at 11-5. Now, a team that a lot of people are high on, they were high on them last year. I wasn't, and I ended up jumping on board late. I'm shaving that Lions head right now. I'm telling you, I'm taking the mane right off of it. I am not on the Lions bandwagon. I'm jumping off again, one, because it's the Lions, and two, I just don't think that this team is mentally strong enough to make the leap. And the reason I think that is, one, look at all the off-season issues. I mean, they're basically the Cincinnati Bengals of the early 2000s, the late 90s. All the arrests, all the distractions off the field. Then you have major issues again at running back, much like Green Bay. Not as severe as Green Bay, but Javid Best, all the concussion issues. Mikel LeShore, they drafted at Illinois 2 years ago. He missed his whole rookie season due to injury. He's still not healthy. Now he's serving a suspension for off-the-field issues. Is this guy ever going to get on the field and really be the running back they drafted him to be in the second round 2 years ago? I don't know. That defense, they've given up a lot of yards in the secondary. Are they really that much more improved? Remains to be seen. I mean, Matt Stafford and Calvin Johnson are phenomenal players. Don't get me wrong. They'll probably both be in the Pro Bowl. They're going to put up ridiculous numbers, but I just see this team taking a step back. I see them 9-7. I think it's going to be a decent year. I just don't think it's a playoff year for the Detroit Lions. They have some issues they have to address first. I could be wrong, but that's how I feel about it. The Detroit Lions 9-7 out on the outside looking in as far as playoffs are concerned. This brings me to the lonely Minnesota Vikings. Still no new stadium. And, well, hey, this team, they've had a nice influx of talent. They still have major issues in the secondary that need addressed. They have speaking of aging defense, the Williams brothers, Jared Allen. I mean, these guys are not getting any younger by any means. I think Jared Allen could still play football. Don't get me wrong. I just think that the effort and the amount of plays they have to play in a 16-game season for guys that have played a lot of football already is going to be very tough for them to compete at a high level consistently. Yeah, they have some nice pieces on offense, a young promising quarterback, Christian Ponder. They have a couple of nice weapons on the outside, Adrian Peterson, Jerome Simpson they brought in. Again, another guy who has off-the-field issues they brought in from Cincinnati who's currently serving a suspension. Adrian Peterson, how is he going to be coming off a bad knee injury? I see one, this division is a lot better. I see a lot of improvement from Minnesota. I think they'll be a lot funner to watch than they have been the last year or two. But the black and blue division is going to be black and blue for the men in purple. And I think their ship gets pillaged this year. I look at them as a 6-10 team. I'd be surprised if they get the 6-10. But I think best case scenario, they're 6-10. Definitely in a rebuilding process in Minnesota. Now, let's look at the good old AFC North division I'm very familiar with. One of the toughest divisions in football. I mean, the Bengals, Ravens, and Steelers, all three of those teams made the playoffs last year. The only division in football to have three teams in the playoffs was the AFC North last year, and it doesn't look like it's getting any easier. All these teams, I think, are definitely stacked, but I'm going to start with who I think is going to win the division. That is the Baltimore Ravens. They won the division last year. I expect them to win the division this year. Heck, they came within a wide field goal kick of beating the Patriots in Foxborough to go to the Super Bowl. That's how close they were. Now, the window is closing, I think, on greats like, you know, Ray Lewis and Ed Reed, but I think Ray Rice, Torrey Smith from Maryland, a wide receiver in his second year, and Ozzie Newsome, I mean, proving to be one of the best minds in the NFL, keeps finding young talent, making the right moves personnel-wise, salary-wise, to keep guys around, extending the right guys, letting the right guys leave. He's been phenomenal since he's been there, really evolving this team, evolving player talent, player development. The Ravens have been one of the best in the NFL at doing it. I expect the Ravens to be on a mission this year. Again, that window for that defense with Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, and those guys, that window is getting a little smaller. It's getting a little smaller. They've been saying that for years. I think if this is the year, if the Ravens are going to get another Super Bowl, this is the year I think they're going to do it. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to look pretty by any means, but it's going to be effective. And I think Joe Flacco is a very underrated quarterback is going to have a big time year, and it's going to come one on Joe Flacco's arm and two Ray Rice's legs, you know, catching and receiving the ball. I think the Ravens roll to a 12-4 record and win the AFC North. Again, it's not always going to be pretty, but it is going to be effective. And the team I think is going to be right hot on their heels, and that is no, not the Steelers, the Cincinnati Bengals. I said it, the Cincinnati Bengals, baby. Yeah, that may just be a surprise. They were a surprise team last year. A lot of people were like, oh, that Bengals team, they're awful. They're going to be 2-14. They made the playoffs. I mean, very, very young, very, very young, talented team, but the coaching staff, the system's been in place. Marvin Lewis has been there for a number of years. He just got another extension. He's going to be there for more. And I tell you what, they got a young, hungry team. A.J. Green, the wide receiver from Georgia in his second year. Andy Dalton, the Red Rocket. Andy Dalton from TCU in his second year. Jermaine Gresham, who I think at tight end is going to have a monster year. Monster year. So fantasy football players, take a look at Jermaine Gresham. He may be there late in rounds. If you're looking at playing that type of game, Jermaine Gresham at tight end is going to have a big time season, I think. Adding Ben Jarvis Green Ellis from New England, bringing him at running back. It's going to be running back by committee, but I think at the end of the year, you're going to see Green Ellis pounding the rock. Play action pass, that plays right into what Marv Lewis wants to do. They have a very fast, aggressive defense. They like to get at the quarterback. This Bengals team, hey, look, it's the Bengals, right? So let's keep expectations to a certain amount here, but I think a playoff appearance is definitely something to think about. A wild card spot at 10-6 is not out of the question. I definitely don't believe that it is. Now that leaves me to the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think this team is good, and they have a lot of Pittsburgh has a lot of issues. For the first time in a long time, Pittsburgh has business issues more than they have player issues. Some player issues, a lot of those guys who won all those games and won those Super Bowls, a lot of those guys are slowly fading away, whether it be to retirement or salary cap issues or just the fact that just business of the NFL. And that's how what happens. And that's what Pittsburgh is dealing with right now. They have a new play caller, but they still have Ben Roethlisberger. They still have Tomlin as their coach, who I think is a very, very good coach. Look, they still have that group of linebackers, including James Harrison, who I think is not as skilled as maybe some people think he is. I think he's just a cheap shot artist, and if he's beat on a play, he'll just spear you in the head and get you out of the game. That's James Harrison there of Pittsburgh Steelers. That's what I think about him. I think he's a dirty son of a bitch, honestly. I don't like that guy at all. I don't think he should really be in the league. Anybody who's like, I don't care if I hit a guy in the head. I'm sorry, that with what we know about concussions nowadays, that guy someone needs to dish out some medicine to him. That's how I feel about it. But hey, look, they've got a new play caller, Todd Haley, coming in from KC. They've addressed the offensive line in the draft, but I think they're going to fight the Bengals for that wild card spot. But I think the young and hungry Cincinnati Bengals, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I really think the Cincinnati Bengals are going to beat them out of a wild card spot, and the Steelers end up at 9-7 on the outside looking in on the playoffs. I don't think you're going to get three teams from the playoffs in the NFC North this year. And that leaves me to my beloved Cleveland Browns. I got my Cleveland Browns shirt on. I'm ready for the first preseason game Friday. You're a Browns fan when you're excited about preseason, right? Hey, well, I tell you what, the Cleveland Browns, let's make no mistake about it. They have been the whipping boy of the NFC North for well over 12 years since coming back into the league in 99. They've had 16 different quarterbacks in that time frame. But this past week, finally, Randy Lerner, the son of Alfred Lerner, sold the team to billionaire Jim Haslam of Tennessee, who's actually been part owner of the Steelers, majority owner of the Steelers for the last five seasons. He already has pre-approval from the NFL to be an owner. I really think this is a big-time move for the Browns. I think this is strategic planning on Lerner's part. I think maybe he could have done it a little sooner. Let's face it, Randy Lerner was never a football guy. He's a soccer guy. He lives in England, and it was never really his baby. It was his dad's baby. He was just kind of the caretaker for several years. He finally sold it. He finally got a regime in there that's influxed talent into this organization for the first time in a long, long time. Tom Hecker, the general manager, who came from Philadelphia. Coincidentally enough, the VP of operations, who I believe Jim Haslam is going to hire, used to work with Tom Hecker in Philadelphia with the Eagles. So I think there's a natural partnership there. Now, what that means for Mike Holmgren, I think he's going to be out anyway, and I don't think it's going to be on bad terms. I think that he's probably going to be around for a year or two, finish out his contract. I think Jim Haslam wants to learn everything he can about football, and who better to learn it from than the guy who has been one of the greatest in football as far as organizationally, coaching, personnel, and then Mike Holmgren and Tom Hecker. Those guys have done a phenomenal job wherever they've been. They've really upgraded the talent big time in Cleveland over the last two or three seasons via the draft. It's been a slow process. I know fans are impatient. I'm impatient. We want to go spend money in free agency, do all these things. But look at the players they've really put together on defense. That defense was top five in the NFL last year. And then they go out and they get Trent Richardson from Alabama. They go ahead and get Brandon Whedon, the quarterback from Oklahoma State. That big time progression is going to depend on Whedon. Does he pick it up right away or not? I don't think you can necessarily measure this team in wins and losses, but I tell you what, a lot of people are saying, oh, the Browns are going to be awful this year. They're going to win two or three games. Well, they said that about the Bengals last year and they won 10 games. Now, do I think the Browns are going to win 10 games this year? No, I'm not drinking any Kool-Aid. I've got a little glass of water here and there's no Kool-Aid at my desk. But I do think that the Browns can be 6-10. The very optimistic, the fan in me thinks 500. That's very, very optimistic, of course. Maybe there is some little something in my water. I don't know. But I think 6-10 is a realistic number, but I think this team is going to be very, very competitive. And I think it's going to depend on this very young defense creating turnovers, getting stops like they did last year, and the offense actually putting points on the board. That's the reason they lost a lot of games last year, is because their offense was pathetic. So they get a little offense, that defense gets a little energy, gets a little momentum. You never know what can happen. That's why they play the games. I still think it's still another rough year. Fellow Browns fans, that's another sub 500 year and another high draft pick. But again, something to build on in a year or two. I think this Browns team, what they've done, the salary cap they have, a very dangerous player in a couple years in the NFL. And this has been our NFL preview here on Unsigned.
False start, offense. Center.
You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game.
Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
Congratulations. See you in Pittsburgh.
Can't wait. That's why we took the damn field. Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their ass. But they are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
Ah, that never gets old, right? Hey, one more thing I want to cover tonight, and that is the Associated Press releasing the top 25 for college football. Hard to believe. I mean, football has really kind of crept up on us. College football, the pros preseason started. The Hall of Fame game was last week. And I tell you what, here it is, the top 25.
Newsflash.
The top 25 for college football is out, and here it is as it lays right now, according to the Associated Press from USA Today. Number 25, Auburn. They finished 8-5 last year. Notre Dame also finished 8-5 at number 24. Number 23, Florida. Number 22, Boise State. Number 21, Kansas State. Number 20, Virginia Tech. Number 19, Oklahoma State. Number 18, Stanford. Number 17, TCU. Number 16, Nebraska. Number 15, Texas. Keep an eye out for this Texas team. I think they're very dangerous this year. Number 14, Clemson. Always a lot of talent. You never know what they're going to do. Number 13, Michigan State. Number 12, Wisconsin. I think they're going to have another big year, looking for another Rose Bowl. Number 11, West Virginia. Another team like Texas. I think they're boatloaded of talent, very dangerous team. Now looking at our top 10, you have Arkansas, a lot of issues there with coaching turnover, hard to tell how that team is going to react. Number 9, the South Carolina Gamecocks and the old ball coach. Number 8, Michigan, coming in at number 8 in the top 10. Number 7, Florida State. Number 6, Georgia, again another very dangerous team with a lot of talent. Oregon, the Oregon Ducks at number 5. Number 4, the Oklahoma Sooners. Always, Stoops has always got a nice group of guys there. I don't know if they can necessarily compete for a national title, but I think they'll definitely be there towards the end. Now, here is your top 3. This came as a shock to me. Not because they're number 3, because they weren't number 1. That is South Carolina, the USC Trojans. Excuse me, South California, Southern California. I thought, with Barkley coming back and then them basically getting Silas Red, the big-time running back, to leave Penn State to come to USC, that is the biggest coup of Lane Kiffin's career, I think. Silas Red is a stud running back as far as the college level is concerned. And, I mean, this Trojans team is loaded. I mean, loaded with talent. Now, they're not very deep because of the sanctions. This is the first year coming off the Reggie Bush sanctions. But, I mean, as far as their starting 11 on offense and their starting 11 on defense and their special team units, they are as good as anybody in the country. Take it to the bank. They are good. Now, if they start having injury issues, then, you know, that's a different story. Maybe they struggle in the season. But the Pac-10 is not as stiff as you think it would be. I mean, obviously, Oregon's pretty good. You know, that's, I mean, Stanford, they're going to be, they're not going to be as good as they have been. And I think Arizona and Washington will be decent teams. But I think the Trojans are prime for a national title run coming off the sanctions. Number two, Alabama, last year's champion. And number one, the LSU Tigers, returning a whole heck of a lot of talent. Again, you have the SEC dominating the top 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the top 10 teams in the SEC. In the top 25 polls. So, again, on some of these teams, the SEC are going to play one another, are going to drop out. It just remains to be seen as do the Trojans stand pat, go undefeated, and just a matter at that point, if they go undefeated, who from the SEC do they play? Because I don't see anyone other than maybe Michigan from the Big Ten and maybe Oklahoma jumping any of these SEC teams, and they would have to be undefeated to do so the way the system is set up right now. But, of course, the playoff system is going to be coming in about a year or two, so all those things are going to go out the window. We're getting top four teams in a playoff the way it should be, maybe an and-one. We'll see how that all is going to play out. But that's a little taste of college football for you here on the Unsigned Show, and we'll cover more of it, obviously, as we get closer to September, but that's your preseason number top 25. Take it as it were, because this top 25 is not going to look the same as it does in December. I'll tell you that right now. But I hope you enjoyed the show tonight. A lot of information we covered. I had a good time. Mike, thanks for running the board. Does a wonderful job as always. No band tonight, but we have a band next week, so definitely check us out. Band from Arizona by the name of Broken Romeo, so definitely check them out. Good group of guys, really good tunes. You'll definitely enjoy it. And we'll still do our NFL coverage and, you know, wrap up of the Olympics as well, and off the off the path section that we always do. Hey, it seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, everybody, do so.